Heart and Halo, by His Divine Grace Swami B.R. Sridhar. Foreword. It is a privilege and a great fortune once again to be able to present more nectarian words from the lips of His Divine Grace Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Sri Srila Bhakti Rakshak Sridhar Dev Goswami Maharaj to the English-speaking public. It is hoped that these words will find their way into the hearts of all good souls, as well as enliven the practitioners on the path of bhakti. Some people like to read a book out of curiosity, others with keen interest but a critical eye, while others again intend to profit by the fruit of their study, and it is this class we mainly appeal to in the present work. The successful reception worldwide of our previous publication, The Golden Staircase, has encouraged us in this attempt. Srila Guru Maharaj writes in his Sri Sri Prapanna Jivanamritam 1.8, Jak thokta rupa padina nichenot paditenale hemnak shudish tathayvatra virahati hriti satam. As Srila Rupa Goswami Pad has in his humility expressed that gold can be purified with fire lit by a barbarian, similarly, the pure devotee's grief born of separation from the Lord may also be dispelled by this book. The words of Srila Sridhar Maharaj are already living in the hearts and homes of many, many people in the world today in the form of books and audio and video cassettes. The sweet vibration of his kirtan in the form of Hari Katha continues to expand to the limits of the universe. Srila Sridhar Maharaj was once described as a man of eternal mind. Such was the feeling of those persons fortunate enough to hear him speak about the spiritual world. The preciseness of his representation of Siddhanta, devotional conclusions, the clarity of his theological and ontological analysis, the startling effectiveness and simplicity of his analogies, along with the extraordinary combination of gravity and at times childlike simplicity, marked him as truly unique. One felt he was the most genuine person one could ever meet. His own Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, referred to him as a man of substance. Small wonder, then, that devotees from far and wide would seek him out for his reliable and final judgment on any matter of importance. Even many of those who were placed in opposition to him eventually could not help but be charmed. When he himself once inquired from one such gentleman as to why, even while maintaining this frame of mind, he still continued to visit him regularly, the man replied, "Because of your deep intelligence, sound common sense, and disinterested nature." The present selection is from informal talks recorded at the Sri Chaitanya Saraswat Mat between 1982 and 1985. The title of the book, Heart and Halo, is Srila Sridhar Maharaj's own sweet expression to describe the bhav and kanti of Srimati Radharani, the supreme predominated moiety, consort of the supreme personality of Godhead Sri Krishna. Once when His Divine Grace was searching for a fitting expression to describe her inner and outer qualities, the devotees attending his talk at the time attempted to provide suitable expressions, mood and lustre, feeling and effulgence, and several other such versions were put forward, but each time Srila Sridhar Maharaj shook his head, unsatisfied. Suddenly, with his smile lighting up his countenance, he looked up and said sweetly, "Heart and Halo." Especially we offer our dandavat pranams to His Divine Grace Srila Bhakti Sundar Govinda Deva Goswami Maharaj, the beloved successor of Srila Bhakti Rakak Sridhar Deva Goswami Maharaj, and present President Acharya of Sri Chaitanya Saraswat Mat worldwide. Under his shelter, affection and inspiration, A new generation of devotees are blossoming. May this generation go forth into the world carrying the eternal message of Srila Sridhar Maharaj to all corners. We would like to personally express our gratitude to all those who have helped this work through its various stages to completion, especially Sripad B.A. Sagar Maharaj, Sripad B.P. Janardhan Maharaj, Sripad B.C. Parbat Maharaj, Sri Shruta Shrava Prabhu, Sri Sarva Bhavana Prabhu, Sri Navadeep Prabhu, Sri Jagat Bandhu Prabhu, Sri Aditi Nandan Prabhu, Sri Lalita Charan Prabhu, Sri Narahari Prabhu, Srimati Svanangi Devi Dasi, Srimati Anupama Devi Dasi, Srimati Sita Devi Dasi, Srimati Tilak Devi Dasi, and Srimati Dikshavati Devi Dasi. We apologize if any mistakes of any kind remain in this work, despite every effort to eradicate them. Hare Krishna, Swami B.S. Tridandi, Safal Ekadashi, December 18th, 1995. Heart and Halo. Part 1. The Soul and the Supreme Shelter. The key is in your own hand. There is consciousness of the higher, the subjective world, and consciousness of the lower objective world. Connection with the lower objective world binds us with misery, and relationship with the superior consciousness lifts us up, gives us real fortune. One result is from dedication, and another is from enjoyment. In a word, enjoyment is bad, and devotion is good. On the side of devotion is the Lord, and on that of enjoyment, misery. There are so many things to be enjoyed. This is fascination with hell, with reaction. Bhaktistvai stira tara bhagavan jadishad daivenanak phalati dibya kishora murti mukti swayam mukulitanjali sevate sman dharmatma kama gataya shamaya pratiksha. Krishna Karnamrit 107. In his Krishna Karnamrit, Bilva Mongal Thakur says, Bhaktistvai stiratara bhagavan jadishat. My Lord, if my dedication, my veneration to you is permanent, is in a settled stage, daivenana phalati dibhakishora murti. And if it reaches to such a height that we can find dibhakishora murti, a young pair engaged in that highest pastime, if we can reach so far to find out the eternal pastimes of the divine couple, if we can reach to this extent, then we will find mukti svayam mukulitanjali sevate sman. Oh, the facility of liberation, emancipation, with folded palms will come to serve us in any way we like. And dharmata kama gataya shamaya pratiksha. Dharma, the result of dutifulness, artha, money-making, and kama, the objects of sense perception. They are all ready and waiting outside. And whenever a call comes, they will come in front of us. What do you want, my master, my lord? That will be our position. Dharma, artha, and kama will wait outside. And whenever we call them, they will present themselves. What do you want me to do? And mukti, liberation, will be always moving around us with folded palms, doing service of different types. If in our fortune we can rise up to such a height as to find that divine couple engaged in happy pastimes. Bilva Mongal Thakur showed in his life a peculiar example, how from the house of the prostitute he went straight to Vrindavan and got the grace of the Supreme Entity. How in his life he was so much engrossed in, almost swallowed by, sensualism of the lowest type. And from that position, in a single life, he could raise himself to the highest stage of realization of the beautiful. Mahaprabhu took two books from South India. One was Brahma Samhita and the other was Krishna Karnamrit. Krishna Karnamrit is about the pastimes of Vrindavan, and Brahma Samhita shows the ontological basis of the Absolute, how the Lord of Vrindavan is the highest conception of reality. Krishna Leela is not a matter of history. In history, events occur, they happen once and can't reoccur at any time. It is an eternal flow in which what is going on in the past never comes again. There is an expression, history repeats itself, but that is in the similar nature of the event, not the actual fact. History repeats its nature, but what is gone is gone. Once it is gone forever. But in Krishna Leela, in the eternal world, it is not so. It may present the same thing every time, at every second. Thus it is called Nitya Leela, eternal pastimes, crossing the limitation, the jurisdiction of history. In history, what is past is dead. But the pastimes of the Lord are eternal, Nitya, always present. Every Leela is eternally present. He can show himself in his eternal forms simultaneously. So in his past, present and future, all events are simultaneously occurring. When he enters the arena of Kamsa, different groups are seeing him in different ways. What is seen by one section of people is seen differently by another, according to their own nature. Even the blind can see him if he wills. If he wills to show himself to anyone, though blind, one can see him clearly, because these eyes of flesh are not necessary to see him. By his willpower alone, he can reveal himself to any person. That was the case with Dhritarashtra in the Kuru Sabha. Dhritarashtra said, "For the time being, my Lord, restore my eyesight so that I can see your wonderful form which the others are seeing and praising. You can do anything, so only for the time being remove my blindness." "It is not necessary to remove your blindness, Dhritarashtra. I say, you see me, and you will see me." And by his order, Dhritarashtra saw. His order, his wish, is everything. His simple will is everything. The cause of all existence. The Kurus wanted to see Draupadi naked, but Draupadi's appeal reached him, and he sanctioned cloth, and that cloth became infinite, of infinite character. As much cloth as they removed, so much cloth remained. It is the will, the bichar, which is everything. Such great potency of such high quality is in the prime cause. We are accustomed to think, this is good, this is bad, and this is possible, this is impossible. We are accustomed to such considerations within our rules of thought, but these rules do not apply in his case. All of our experience will fail to occupy even a very negligible part of his kingdom. He is wonderful. In the example of Vaman Avatar, it is told of his wonderful stride, Adbhut Kram. With one stride he covered the whole earth, and with the next he captured the whole of heaven. He then needed a place to put his third step, but where? He is Adbhut Kram, he of wonderful stride. All his steps are wonderful. He is wonder, the source of all wonder to our tiny brain. He is here, he is also everywhere. With his full representation, he is everywhere, yet he is nowhere. Everything is in him, and nothing is in him. Krishna said, "Try to understand my peculiar position, Arjuna." He is the mystery of all mysteries. Even our own soul is astonishing to our worldly experience. Ascharjavat pashyati kaschidenam, ascharjavad vadati tathaiva chanyo. Ascharjavat chainang anya shrinoti suttap inang veda nachaiva kaschit. Bhagavad Gita 2:29. We do not even know the extraordinary nature of our own self. It is of a very high order, but our attention is focused towards so many mortal things. We have been introduced to and captured by the meanest aspect of the world. This is the consequence of the mood of enjoyment. We want to enjoy, we want to exploit. A good exploiter is a king to us, but exploitation in itself is degrading, very mean and low. It takes us to the lowest position and makes us victims of a great reaction. Exploitation and enjoyment, we are in the midst of them and do not know anything but enjoyment. We want to understand anything and everything in terms of enjoyment. We are in such a filthy, degraded position. Only enjoyment, enjoyment, that is exploitation. But to exploit is the meanest type of nature. It is hateful, and we must get out of the clutches of that ghost of exploitation. And there is another ghost, renunciation, idleness. But the noble thing is dedication, a dedicated life. There are two ghosts, one of renunciation and the other of exploitation. And we have to get out of that nightmare, that mania, which is based on our tendency of measuring things to be good and bad. In exploitation, there is division into regular and irregular, or dharm and adharm. And then renunciation. So many great stalwarts of that conception recommend a complete cessation of the dynamic life, a dead stop. But that should not be the prospect of any conscious man. A dead stop to life, is that any goal of life for the saner section? A life of nobility, a life of dedication. And not only ordinary dedication for the environment, but dedication for the highest good, is the highest form of life. In the lower stage, that dedication is calculative. In the higher stage, spontaneous, automatic. And really, there is joy. Joy is there in quality and quantity. In every way, real life is there. Life is there, and here is the worst shadow, the perverted reflection. And we are told, Udhared Atmanatmanam, the key is in our own hand, the freedom by which we can associate with anything, good or bad, and reap the result accordingly. Ultimately, we are told that the key is in our own hand. None else is to be blamed for our present condition. But there is always the possibility of noble help being extended to us, and we must accept that. Our past actions also influence us a great deal, whether they were good, bad, or of the eternal aspiration, Sukriti. But ultimately, the possibility of free action is not taken away from us at any stage. Even if we are reduced to the level of taking birth as a tree, there also the freedom is within. It is hard to think that a tree has got independence, free will, but it is there in a suppressed position. Freedom is within us also, and we may try as far as possible to understand how it is so, but our freedom is also covered by so many conditions that we may think we are not free, but are forced by circumstances. But still, we are free for our selection of any path, good or bad. Our existence is very small, and so our freedom is also small and meagre, but it is there. Though almost negligible, it exists. Journey to the center. Generally, if all our activity is stopped by unfavorable weather, we think, this is very bad. We are men of action, men who exploit the environment and nature for gathering some energy. We are always trying to collect some energy for our use. That is our nature. The very nature of those who live in this mortal world is to collect more and more energy and wealth that can be utilized in a time of need. If there is any hindrance to that end, we think it is a very bad circumstance, in opposition to the object of our life. But to remind us about the importance of our inner wealth, we are advised that the outer nature cannot do us so much harm as can our internal nature, that is, our apathy to collect more wealth for the inner existence, the inner self. Be mindful of that. Losing things of this mortal world is not bad. It is all coming and going. The body itself, the center of all this activity, will also vanish. Then what is the necessity of collecting so much energy for the bodily connection? So awaken your soul, the real person within. Search him out and try to help him. That is possible only with the help from the sadhu. The day in which we do not find any saint or have any discussion about the real purpose of life, the inner substance, that day we are the loser. Be conscious of that. In all respects, in any way possible, mind your own lesson, mind your own interest, find your own self. Be unmindful towards the external world and circumstances, and dive deep into the reality, the inner world. Find your inner self and the inner world where you live, where your inner self is living. Try to find your home, to go back to God, back to home. Your energy must be utilized for going home and not for wandering in the other land, the land of death. Try to avoid the land of death at any cost. Always try to find the eternal soil, that soil to which you belong. Try to understand what is your home and why it is your home. Home comfort, what does it mean? It means our birthplace, the place where we are born. In the Srimad Bhagavatam we find this verse, Satang prasangan mamma bija sambido bhavanti hritkana rasayana katha tadjoshanad ashvapavargavatmani swadharatir bhaktir anukramishyati. Srimad Bhagavatam 3.25.25. In the association of pure devotees, discussions about me are very pleasing and satisfying to the ear and the heart. Such talks, which are full of spiritual potency, are a source of sweetness, and by such cultivation, the path of liberation from worldly life quickly opens. Then gradually one attains firm faith, which in due course develops into taste, and then real love for me. This was spoken by the incarnation of the Lord, Sri Kapiladev, to his mother, Devahuti, in response to her inquiry as to what is the real goal of life and how to attain it. It came about in this way. Devahuti was married to the sage Kardama Rishi. After passing some years in the enjoyment of married life, Devahuti conceived a child in her womb from the Rishi. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says, Prajanas chasmi kandarpa. Of Cupids, I am he who ensures progeny. And elsewhere it is said, Prajanaya na rataye. Married life is not meant for enjoyment, but for the purpose of producing good progeny. So when the objective of their marriage was achieved, the Rishi proposed that he retire from married life. He told Devahuti, "You have a child in your womb, and it is not an ordinary child. The Lord himself is coming. So I am going to live alone for my own higher purpose of life." Then Devahuti said, "I have such a good partner. I am fortunate to have a saint like you as my husband. But I did not take advantage of your noble personality to learn anything about Brahma, about the Lord, about my inner life's necessity and its fulfillment. I did not inquire about that. I was only busy to serve you, to satisfy your desires. Though I had such a noble companion, I did not utilize my fortune. Now I pray that you may stay for some time and teach me, help me in spiritual life, and then you may go." Kardam Rishi said, "You will get help from your son. It is the Lord himself who is coming, not an ordinary child. Remember this, and in time you will receive that spiritual help from him. So I won't stay, I shall go now." He departed. But soon the child appeared, and he was brought up by Devahuti. Because of her great motherly affection, however, as her son grew, she gradually forgot what her husband had revealed, that he was not an ordinary child. In the course of time, when the boy had grown and was one day absorbed, Devahuti was reminded, "Oh, the mood of my child does not seem to be ordinary." She could understand that he was engaged in deep thought and considered, "His father foretold that the Lord would appear through me, and now I see it is true. My son's mood does not seem to be worldly, but it is from above. His mind is absorbed in transcendental thought." She then slowly approached him. "Child, your father told me that you are not an ordinary boy of this world. You are divine. I wanted some spiritual advice from him, but he told me that you would advise me. For so long I did not heed that, but today your mood is encouraging me. It is reminding me of those words of your father and encouraging me to approach you for spiritual advice. Be pleased to advise me about what is spiritual truth. Who am I? What is this world? How can I find the proper direction of life? Who is the owner of this world, and what is my duty towards him? You are not an ordinary boy, so I want to know all these things from you, my child." Then from the lips of her son came this verse, given in the Srimad Bhagavatam, "Satang prasangang mamma virja sambido bhavanti hritkana rasayana katha tadjoshanad ashvapavargavatmani shradharatir bhaktir anukramishyati." Srimad Bhagavatam 3:25-25. Lord Kapila said, "Satang prasangan mama virja sambido, talks about me which are full of potency can only be found coming from the lips of my devotees. Not only lip-deep words, but words that have got depth, spirit, power, that represent reality, come from the lips of my real devotee. Such words are not shallow, but are surcharged with spirit, with life, and can enliven us. Bhavanti hrit karna rasayana katha. They satisfy both our ear and our heart, and give a taste of spiritual joy, rasayana. Their words are surcharged with the ecstasy of the spiritual world, and colour our ear, our mind and our heart, physically, mentally, and also on the plane of our soul. Tadjoshanad, by hearing from the real source, from that real sadhu, ashvapavargavatmani, we are led towards relief from this worldly life. By a gradual process, we attain these things, shraddha, ratir, bhaktir, anukramishyati. First, shraddha, ever-increasing faith, then ruti, slight taste, then we get real love, bhakti. By anukramishyati, a gradual process, we are taken towards the higher domain. In this way, the boy began to advise his mother, Devahuti. This Devahuti Nandan, Kapila, was the son of Kaudam Rishi, but there was another Kapila whose Sankhya philosophy does not recognize God. It only analyzes the material elements, gradually eliminating everything of spiritual substance. So there are two Kapilas, both of whom gave Sankhya philosophy. Sankhya meaning to enumerate or count. The divine son of Kaudam Rishi, Kaudam Kapila, and the other, Shankyaka Kapila. Kapila, the son of Kaudama and Devahuti, gave what is known as Sankhya, but he has given recognition to the Supreme Lord, Ishvar, whereas the atheist Kapila claimed Ishvara Asidhe. There is no necessity of any god to explain the existence of this world. That is his conclusion. The Nayakas, logicians, say that there must be one who has created this world. This world has been created, so there must be someone who has done it. Their highest conclusion is that there must be a creator, and he is God, Ishvara. But the atheistic Kapila says, no, there is no necessity of any god to explain the existence of this material world, Ishvara Asidhe. His finding, his conclusion is that there is no necessity of a creator. Automatically everything exists. Only two things are necessary. First, a particle of spirit, and second, matter. Matter and spirit combined, Shiv and Shakti, have created this world. There are so many spiritual particles, like specks of sand or dust, and by their combination with matter, this world is going on automatically. Once, while at the Madras Mutt, I met a gentleman from Madhupur who was a follower of this school of thought. He was an educated Bengali gentleman, and I asked him, "What have you got from your guru, that Kapila?" He said, "So many souls are there, Jata Jeev, and everyone is a Shiv, independent of this matter." I said, "You are satisfied with this explanation?" "Yes, I'm satisfied. Pasha Baddha Bhaved Jiva, Pasha Mukta Sada Shiva." The soul, while conditioned, is Jeev, when liberated, is Shiv. I told him, "Where your philosophy ends, our philosophy, that of the Bhagavat school, begins." "How is it so?" that gentleman asked. "You will have to explain where these Shivas exist. There are so many Shivas, like particles of spiritual dust. But should we not think that they must be living in some position, and that there must exist some relationship between them? There are so many, and some sort of relationship must be there between them, and they must also stay somewhere in some position, some plane. And how are they harmonized together? Or are they each an independent unit, all fighting with one another? If not, then what is their nature?" The Bhagavat has come to explain about the Mukta Jivas, the liberated souls. These souls, who were once diseased, are now free from the disease. In their healthy condition, what do they do? What is their position, their characteristic, their nature, their object, their pastimes? We have to know that. So Bhagavatam has given us an explanation. Devarishi Narad asked Vyasadeva, "Explain what is the normal natural condition of the liberated souls who are not diseased." And that has been given. There is a center, and all function in connection with him, and all are harmonized together. In Srimad Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says, "Yat sankai prapite sthanam tad yogar api gamyate ekang sankyam cha yogam cha yapashyati shapashyati. Bhagavad Gita 5:5. He has true vision who can see that the Shankha and Yoga systems are one and the same. One person is trying to reach the ultimate goal by external elimination, and the other by internal elimination. This is body, this is mind, this is soul, Atma, then Supersoul, Paramatma, and onwards. The search is all within. The process of elimination is within. And by that he is trying to reach the core. And the other, by elimination of the elements of the external world, earth, water, fire, air, ether, is trying to understand the origin. That is Sankhya. Neti, neti, neti. This is not it. This is not it. This is dependent, this is also dependent, this is not original, nor this, nor this. All are effects. Then what is the cause? To inquire through the external process is Sankhya, and the internal process is through yoga. Pranayama, pratyahara, dhyana, dharana, samadhi. That is, breath control, withdrawing the senses from their objects, concentration, meditation, full absorption and trance. So by elimination of the effect, we come in contact with the cause. From the gross, we start towards the subtle, and we reach more and more subtle planes in the causal direction. This is the process in both Sankhya and Yoga. But in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, Shukadeva Goswami, who is speaking to Parikit Maharaj, begins his talk by saying that these two, Sankhya and Yoga, and also Swadharma Parinishthaya, fulfilling one's Vedic duty, can all give us liberation. But there is something more. Etavan Sankhya Yoga Bhyam Swadharma Parinishthaya Janmalabha Parakpungshang Ante Narayana Smriti. Srimad Bhagavatam 2:16. He says, Etavan, so far, by these processes, we are told our liberation may be achieved. By Sankhya, external elimination. By Yoga, internal elimination. And also by Swadharma Parinishthaya, discharging one's duty as it is recommended in the Veda. To perform whatever is one's respective duty, as it is recommended, without any special aim or object, is nishkam, action free from personal desire. Because it has been advised by the Shastra as my duty in my present position, I am doing it, but in a disinterested way, without any special end. As a Brahmin, I am told, you must do these things, so I'm doing them. As a Kshatriya, my duty is to keep the peace and control the evildoers. That is my duty and I'm doing it. As a Vaishya, I'm advised to do such and such. Because it is advised in the Shastra, I'm doing my respective duty in a disinterested way, that is, without any special aim or interest. All these three processes, Sankhya, Yoga, and Vedic duty lead us to liberation, mukti. But janmalabha para pungshang ante narayana smriti, after we get relief from the external bondage, the fulfillment of life is in remembering our Lord Narayan, the Creator, and our relationship with Him. We must get out of the net we are entangled in. And after getting released from this entanglement, we must search out our proper relationship with the prime cause. Who are we in our relationship with Him? Here the Bhagavat begins, Etavan Sankhya Yogabhyam Swadharma Parinishthaya Chanmalabha Parakpungshang Ante Narayana Smriti. Srimad Bhagavatam 2:16. Chanmalabha means fulfillment of our existence, our birth. Labha means the gain, the fulfillment, the end. What is that? Ante Narayana Smriti, our connection, our reconnection with the center, the all-harmonizing center, that should be our goal. And the Bhagavatam comes to tell us this. So many other shastras come to give us release from this external bondage. But with internal progress, after crossing the marginal plane, we get admission into the Parabhyam, the special area, Vaikunth. That is, we get the visa, Viraja, Brahmalok, Bedi, Parabhyam, Pai. We catch the flow of the current going towards the center. That is the visa. Sankhya, Yoga and Swadharma Parinishthaya can give us the passport to get out of the land where we are living. But after that, if you want to attain something, then a visa is necessary. The real judgment of love. According to Indian medical authorities, in the body is air, bile and mucus, which correspond to air, fire and water, three elements in the ether that influence the earth. Earth is mainly influenced by water, and water by heat, heat by air, and all are fighting, struggling within ether. This is the nature of the material world. Then there is the mental world, the manifestation of the mental energy. I want this, I do not want that. I like this, I don't like that. And the intelligence gives direction to the mind. Don't take this, take that. But it is all within the ahamkar, false ego. Above that is the soul, who experiences everything, good or bad. He is called Purush. Purusha Sukha Dukhanam Bhoktitve Hitur Uchite. Bhagavad Gita 13:21. It is established that it is the conditioned living being, Purusha himself, who is the responsible cause of the feelings of joy and sorrow which he experiences in this world. This is the difference between spirit and matter. Matter, called Prakriti, is energy, but the soul, Purush, experiences good and bad. He is the person who feels good or bad, sorrow or happiness. He is of one substance, and that which is felt is of another. Karya Karana Kartitve Hetu Prakritir Uchite. Bhagavad Gita 13:21. Certainly in this impermanent world, all movement occurs through the inherent quality of the predominated material nature, Prakriti, which is responsible for both cause, the force of the senses, and effect, the material body. So all the activity we find here, all movement, is due to that material energy. And the feeler of everything, the knower, the conceiver, is the soul. The soul is like the eye, an eye seeing anything and everything. In Sankhya philosophy, this Prakriti-Purush relationship has been compared to that of a blind man and a crippled man. A crippled man may ride on the shoulder of a blind man. He who is moving, Prakriti, is blind. And he who is crippled, who is on his shoulder, Purush, has got eyes to see and can guide. The soul is crippled. He cannot move, but he can see. The blind man is the commander of the energy who can move here and there. He can carry, but he is blind. In this way, soul is the knower, the feeler, the subjective existence, and the energetic aspect is that of the force, Prakriti. So there is force and consciousness. We are so much engrossed with force. We only require the force, the energy, and we have forgotten that we are the feeler of that force. That feeler is astonishing. If we try to understand our own self, we will be dumbfounded. Oh, what is this? I am of such a nature. I have nothing to do with this world of mortality. I can live independently of this mortal world. Is it so? Then we will be able to understand further that there is super soul. In the material world, there are so many different planes, the world of heat, that of water, of air. Everything is evolving from a more subtle plane down to gross things, like stone or wood. Just as there is development in this direction in the material world, so in the subjective world there is also development, but upwards, from the soul to super soul, to super super soul. In this way there is development, and it is infinite. And we are tathashta, marginal. Our soul is in the marginal position between higher and lower, between the subtle side and the gross side. The upper side is eternal, it is Satchit Anandam, eternal, conscious and happy. And here, Asat, Achit, Niranand, it is Asat, flickering, every minute it is dying, and Achit, unconscious, and Niranand, with no feeling of joy or happiness. These are the respective natures of this world and of that world. And if we want to have association with that world, we are told that in the highest position there is infinite beauty, love and ecstasy. That world can come down to us, and we can be taken in as one of the Lord's own family members. We can live as a family member with the highest entity of that world. Mahaprabhu told us it is possible, but only through affection, and not by knowledge or any mystic realization. By affection and love we can attract him in such a way that we can be given recognition as a family member, a position very near to him. To such an extent it is possible. In Bhagavad Gita the Lord says, Tato mang tattato gyatva vishate tad anantaram. 1855. After realizing my proper position, they enter there, that is, into my own special jurisdiction, into my family. And the Bhagavatam says, Mamatma bhuyaya chakalpadevai, 11:29-34. They get such high recognition, which qualifies them to live with me eternally as my own. If they selflessly come forward to satisfy me, leaving aside everything, ananya bhajan, if they want me alone and nothing else, then such is their future prospect. Matyo jada chakta samasta karma niveditatma vichikirshito me tadamritattvang pratipadyamano mamatma bhuyaya chakalpate vai. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:29-34. Sanatan Goswami has analyzed what is the proper meaning of this expression, Atma Bhuyaya? My own. They become my own. What is the meaning of own? He says it means to enter into his family, and family means there is gradation. The servant, the friends and their associates, the filial affection group, the guardian group, and then the highest group, that of consorthood. There is one story I heard from my godbrother Vaikanas Maharaj, who was a Brahmin scholar of Orissa, about an incident which occurred in recent history in connection with the Jagannath temple at Puri, where it was customary that no kichorana, kichri, used to be offered to the Lord. Once there was a raid by the Mohammedans on Orissa, and one of the girls of the royal family was abducted for the pleasure of the Mohammedan general by his soldiers. He later left the state, but that girl was left on the outskirts of some village or town, and there she gave birth to a child who was a great devotee. It was a very peculiar thing. The girl was also a devotee, but somehow she had to undergo such a horrible experience. She gave birth to a child and he lived on the outskirts of that town. When he grew up, he used to cook khichdi, That is, rice and beans cooked together, boiled into a half-liquid consistency, and he used to offer that to Jagannath from afar. By dint of his devotion, Jagannath had to go there and accept that Khichdi offering. One day the boy was perhaps late in his offering. Jagannath took the Khichdi, but the time was then late for the temple offering, so he had to run back to install himself in his position in the temple, and a particle of that Khichdi was on his lips. The pandas, the pujaris, the priestly class, noticed, "What is this? How has this happened? We can detect this is not the proper offering to Jagannath. Then how is it here on his lips?" So it was referred to the leader of the pandas, and he also searched, but he could not ascertain the cause. Then it was taken to the king, and he also investigated it. Who has taken this food and smeared it on the mouth of Jagannath? Finally, the priest who had been in charge at the time of the offering of food in the temple was apprehended. "You are responsible. You were in charge of the temple at the time of Jagannath's offering. Then how has this impure thing come in his mouth? You must explain or you will be punished." The man was innocent, and he said, "I do not know anything. I don't know anything." Then, when he was about to be punished, Jagannath came in a dream to the king as well as to the leading priest. "That man is innocent. Don't disturb him. On the outskirts of the town is my devotee. He offered that food to me, and I ate it. But the time was late, and I had to hurry back to occupy my position in the temple, so my mouth was not cleansed. This is the name of that boy. He is living there. He is my devotee, and I've taken this food there." And it was as a result of the Mohammedan's exploitation of the princess that this devotee appeared. So Krishna Bhakti, devotion to Krishna, does not care for the formality or purity or impurity by any worldly considerations. It is independent. Krishna Bhakti is so powerful and doesn't care for anything. Jagannath accepted the offering of that boy who was considered to have the worst fate, a cursed fate. The princess was taken by the Mohammedan, and her issue came in the form of that boy, so he was the curse of the cursed. But his offering attracted Jagannath so much. So love is wonderfully above everything, surpassing all. Mahaprabhu asked us to accept the path of love, which means giving one's heart, oneself. It is so powerful, nothing else can attract Krishna. He is very greedy to eat this love, this prema. He lives on prema. He is the Lord of love. That love has its inner existence. It is the inner existence of all of us. He is love personified, and there is a tinge within us also, and like birds of a feather, love likes love. Once, Mahaprabhu, at the time when he had conquered and captured the Kazi, was leading the Sankirtan party and was feeling very tired. He came to Sridhar Pandit, the poor Brahmin who used to sell plantains in the market to somehow meagerly earn his livelihood. Sridhar Pandit had a well and nearby an iron pot which he used for drawing water. Mahaprabhu began to drink water from the well with that pot which had been left outside. All the devotees objected, "What are you doing? This pot is always kept outside and is very dirty. We are bringing a clean pot for your drinking water." Mahaprabhu ignored them and continued drinking water from that iron pot. He commented, "This is the pot of my devotee Sridhar. It is purer than anything." In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says, "Apichet sudura acharo bhajate mam ananya bhak sadureva samantavya samjag vyavasito hisa." 9:30. If a person is an unalloyed devotee who worships me exclusively, having abandoned all other pursuits based on exploitation and renunciation, even if he commits some abominable action, he is to be considered saintly. He is 100% pure because his endeavors are completely on my behalf and his determination is fixed in that resolve. This is because one who has really surrendered to Krishna is accepted by him as his own, and such a surrendered soul should never be considered impure, a transgressor. So, what is bhajan? It is a transaction of the heart, not of any formality. In Krishna devotion, Krishna bhakti, the only consideration is the dedication of the heart. Krishna wants that, and not any external formality of the civilized or non-civilized world. In the case of Lord Ramachandra, also we see that although in the highest consideration he is the director of moral laws, niti, he could not contain himself when offered something with devotion by an untouchable lady. And that was after she had first taken it herself, after she had taken some sweet. Whatever remained that she considered most tasteful, she kept for Ram, and he accepted it. There is another incident that happened in Vidura's house. While Vidura was out collecting alms, Krishna suddenly appeared as a guest at his house. Vidura's wife received him, but there was nothing to offer, only some bananas. So, after seating him nicely, she gave him that, but she was offering the banana peels to Krishna and discarding the fruit on the ground. She was so bewildered, overwhelmed by the joy of finding that Krishna was suddenly present in her house, that she was discarding the fruit and giving him the peels, and he was eating them. At that very moment, Narad and Vidura arrived. Vidura exclaimed, "What are you doing? You are leaving the fruit and giving the peels to my lord." But Narad came to her relief. "She is bewildered, but he who is eating is not at all disturbed." One might think that he would say, "Oh, give me the fruit. Why are you giving me the peels?" But he is eating without any concern. Then Krishna answered, "I am eating neither the fruit nor the peels, but I am eating that which is devotion. I am accepting her devotion. Neither the peel nor the fruit can satisfy me. I need neither the one nor the other, but I live on devotion, Narad. Pattam pushpam phalam dvayam yome bhakta prayachati tadaham bhaktu paritam ashnami prayatatmana." Bhagavad Gita 9:26. The Lord says here, "I accept all those foodstuffs that are offered, but actually it is not the food itself that I take, rather it is the purpose behind that offering, the ideal. It is the very spirit of the thing I am concerned with, and never the outward show. I am living in the inner world. So with food also, it is the inner substance with which I am concerned, not the external appearance. Therefore it is said, Bhava Grahi Janardana, Lord Janardan, Krishna, sees the mood of devotion." Devotion does not care for the ordinary rules and regulations of this material world. Still, in our lower condition, we are advised to go on with archan, and depending on our stage of realization, what we think to be pure we offer, and what is impure we reject. In the preliminary stage, this is necessary for our fortune, but as we advance, these external considerations are eliminated, and the internal ones are given more and more importance. There is another story which illustrates this. Brajen Sil was a big scholar of Bengal, a scholar of philosophy so extraordinary that once after he had delivered a lecture at the World Conference of Philosophy in Rome, The president of the meeting told him, "I took you to be Aristotle." He was respected as Aristotle, he was such a learned man. He had been a student of Scottish Church College in Calcutta, and once was taking an examination there. While in the examination hall, he was given the questions and paper and began to write his answers. Many questions were there, but he became so engrossed in answering one particular question that he forgot everything else. So deeply engaged was he in answering this single question that he spent the whole time on it and ignored all the others. When the bell rang and the examination time had expired, he was perplexed as to what to do. He had only dealt with one question, but he left his paper and went away. He was the brightest student of the college, but was thinking that his name could not possibly be on the list of successful candidates, because he had only answered one question out of perhaps five or six. But still he was stealthily coming to see if the list of successful candidates had been posted. Then one day he found that his name had appeared at the head of that list. He was perplexed. "How is this? I only dealt with one question, and I am at the head of the list. How is it possible?" So he asked the professor, "Sir, I had answered only one question. How then is it possible that you have given me first place?" "Oh, Mr. Seal, your answer is on the level of a research scholar, not an ordinary student. So I gave you first place." So this is like Raga Marg, where the formal things are all ignored and the substance drawn out. Although normally Mr. Seal should have been placed amongst the lowest of those candidates who failed, the professor was a judge of a bold type and thought, "Oh, his answer to just one question is of such high quality. This student can never be considered to be a failure. Rather, he was given the highest position." So love is such. It does not care for any formality in its real judgment.